are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
That explains it. And Darius, thanks for just bragging about your cool living situation at the top of the podcast while we're slumming it in the United States. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I'm actually impressed that you could count up to episode 152. I thought you kind of stopped at 30 or so.
You notice I don't usually say 152. I go 152.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Yeah, the United States finally catches a break. What are you talking about? We're number one in like evidence.
No, we're not. We're like number like 28th in literacy, like 40th in education.
Ah, those aren't important.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 152 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Eli Rosenzweig and Darius Austin. Darius, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm enjoying a nice sunny evening here in North Wales, so it makes a change for once.
It is not evening for Eli or I, but or Eli or me, but... We are definitely feeling tired and ready for bed. Eli, how are you?
I'm good. I'm actually impressed that you could count up to episode 152. I thought you kind of stopped at 30 or so.
You notice I don't usually say 152. I go 152. I just like straight across read the numbers like a toddler.
That explains it. And Darius, thanks for just bragging about your cool living situation at the top of the podcast while we're slumming it in the United States.
Yeah, I like to sort of get it in early. You know, you guys are about to have Trump as president, I guess, so that's the thing.
Oh, God, don't even say that.
If that happens, we're blaming you, all right?
Well, yeah, we've got Brexit, so we've got to deal with that crap. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm interested to know, like, how is that actually going? Has England completely fallen into the sea?
Basically, nothing's happened at all. Like, they're trying to deal with the negotiations, the trade deals and stuff like that, and I think it's going to take them months for anything to really happen. So at the moment, it's kind of just in a holding pattern. We don't really know.
Well, that's good to know you guys still exist. You know, it's interesting because this time of year, every 4 years, we have the Summer Olympics, and the United States finally gets to realize its goal of being number one at something in the country as we destroyed everybody in the medal count. So U.S. is number one for once.
Yeah, aren't you guys always number one?
Usually. I mean, yeah. It's you know, isn't it the country that tends to spend the most money usually wins the most medals?
Yeah, and I think we probably spent the second most money. We beat China. I think that was considered an achievement. But
yeah, Justin, the United States finally catches a break. What are you talking about? We're number one in like everything.
No, we're not. We're like number like 28th in literacy, like 40th in education.
Ah, those aren't important
things. 87th in childhood mortality. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the United States, and I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I'm very proud of my country.
Nope, traitor. Benedict Arnold over here.
But now is the time to be really proud, as we destroyed everybody in the javelin. Let's go ahead and jump into...
Yes, we take steroids better than everyone else. Hooray.
Yes, we do. Well, I mean, we don't get caught as easily, because Russia had their entire track and field team suspended from the Olympics this year for steroids and performance-enhancing drugs, and their entire Paralympic team.
Well, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
This is true. Let's go ahead and jump in and talk about our first guy of the day. Chuck, who couldn't be here, unfortunately, because of some dental surgery, gave us a couple names of, you know, players that are, I guess, interesting.
That's definitely questionable.
Yeah, he wanted to talk about Jace Peterson and wanted to know why we thought he was not playing full-time over, and I quote, the skeleton that used to be Gordon Beckham.
Hey, that's a former White Sox legend right there.
Well, then why don't you go ahead and lead us off? What are your thoughts on Jace Peterson?
I've always liked him, but I liked him for his stolen base abilities, but right now he's only got 3 steals in 85 games, and he's been caught 4 times. So, you know, he's walked a lot, hasn't struck out a huge amount. He's got a little bit more pop than some people thought he did. he's okay, and obviously he's in a pretty good situation in Atlanta because they're rebuilding and they don't have a whole lot else there. But I'm worried about him moving forward. Maybe he might put up some numbers the rest of this year, but moving forward next year, they're going to have Swanson and Albies probably, and he's going to be more of a platoon, like, utility guy. So, since he's not getting steals, I think he's pretty much useless at this point.
Yeah, the Braves rank, they're tied at 16th with 57 steals this year. They're not a team that necessarily pushes it a ton on the base paths, but, I mean, they steal more than, like, the Orioles, which ridiculously only have stolen 14 total bases this entire season. So I think that Peterson's upside is somewhat limited because, like you said, his best attribute is his speed. They have been playing him a little bit in center field, which I guess gives him some positional flexibility. You know, could play the middle infield, can play center. I'm assuming he'd probably play third, but I don't know why they would.
Yeah, he can.
I mean, rest of the way, I don't know if he has very much value. I think next year maybe he's a little bit more interesting, but he's not as young as a guy as I even thought he was. He's already 26 years old. So, I mean, this may just be one of those guys that was a hyped prospect that never really pans out the way we thought he would. Darius, what are your thoughts on Jace Peterson?
First of all, I've got to agree with Chuck's question. It's not really entirely clear why they are playing Gordon Beckham instead of Peterson. There was a bit more playing time from before they brought Matt Kemp in because they were using him in left as well. But now they've got Kemp in left, Markakis in right. They're going to play Inciarte in centre most of the time. So second, when they're not playing Beckham, seems to be the only place he's going to get playing opportunity. And like Eli said, he's not really been very good at stealing bases either. He wasn't great last year, 12 for 22, and he's even worse this year. So as a 26-year-old who's sort of top fantasy tool isn't actually playing like we thought it would, I don't see an awful lot here that's exciting. He's not on the top of the lineup. He's, you know, got a little bit more power than we thought he would, but nothing that is jumping out at you. And I don't see anything in his profile that suggests to me that he's, going to have some breakout. So I think without the promise of playing time in the future, I don't really see why you'd roster him.
And next year, Malik Smith is going to be back and probably the starting center fielder, so that's even less time for Peterson next year to play.
Well, and they'll still have Inciarte in that outfield and Matt Kemp.
And what, Markakis is signed for another couple of years at least?
Can he just go away?
Yeah, and then, I don't know what they'll have. I mean, they'll obviously have Swanson playing short. I don't know what they'll have playing second or third at this point. But
I think Albies is going to be ready pretty early next year for second.
Oh, do you? Well, and I mean, they seem to have no care about service time. You know, they brought Swanson up from Double A. So, I think Jace Peterson maybe needs a change of scenery. Even if he got one though, he doesn't have a good enough hit tool. Really to ever get on base enough, I think, to really use his speed, even if he is a more efficient base stealer. So, he walks a fair amount. He's walking at 12.5% of time this year. So maybe that'd be enough to get him some opportunities, but he's got to find playing time opportunities. And sadly enough, I don't think there's enough in Atlanta. Let's move over to the next guy that Chuck is forcing us to talk about. That is Chad Call of the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is a kind of a 24-year-old rookie that has come out of nowhere and is actually pitched fairly well. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Chad Call so far?
He's kind of interesting, I think, certainly from a real-life perspective. I think he could be quite useful. He's a ground ball guy, or at least he should be, the way he pitches low in the zone. The percentage isn't as high as I thought it would be when I looked at his profile. But I think that'll probably tick up a bit. And the Pirates are a great team. They obviously shift a lot. So I think he's a good fit for them, and it's a great park as well. But in terms of the fantasy value, I think it's a pretty deep league if you're looking at him, because his strikeout rate is very low. Swinging strike rate matches that. He's not going to miss a ton of bats, so I think you're not going to get many strikeouts at all, and you know, you're hoping for maybe those quality starts if you're in those leagues, and just sort of a solid back of the rotation innings eater for maybe sort of 16 plus teamers is the best you're going to get out of Cool, I think.
Eli, any thoughts on Chad Kall? Is he worth rostering outside of like the deepest of leagues?
No, I mean, he's maybe a streamer at best. I agree with Darius. I mean, it's impressive that he's reached majors at 23 and has pitched fairly well, but if you look at his minor league numbers, I mean, this guy wasn't even getting strikeouts in AA and AAA. It's really not all that encouraging. He did have decent FIPs in the minor leagues, but that was... I mean, he's just not getting any strikeouts. He's not going to go deep into games. I know he's on a pretty good team, but you're better off not wasting that roster spot and just using it to stream. So I'm not all that impressed by him.
Yeah, I think he's a streamer at best. I've got him rostered in like three extremely deep leagues. But like, those are leagues in which, you know, they're NL only. They're the massive 30-man or 30-team league with 100 roster spots league that I'm in. I mean, these are leagues in which innings are a valuable category, you know, for fantasy. So, I mean, in those leagues, yeah, if you have a chance to acquire him, I mean, he's probably not owned at this, or he's probably not on the waiver wire at this point, but, you know, he's a good guy to hold on to, can, you know, help your ratios a little bit, kind of rest of the way, give you the innings that you need. But I mean, he hasn't had more than five strikeouts in any game, and he hasn't gone beyond six innings. So I mean, he's gotten five quality starts out of his seven games, but you know, he hasn't gone beyond six in any of those quality starts. So not necessarily a guy that is extremely interesting in fantasy circles for the most part. Let's move over to a guy who is pretty interesting because he's having kind of the best week or best couple weeks ever, and that's Adrian Gonzalez, who is absolutely just lighting it up right now. Hit three home runs the other night against Cincinnati, and he's on fire. Eli, what are your thoughts on Adrian Gonzalez rest of the way and then going into next season?
He's always a guy that gets underrated. He's just a good, solid... He kind of reminds me of Hosmer a little bit. The first baseman that gives you a little bit in each category, obviously not in steals, but he doesn't have massive power, but he always finds a way to hit for a pretty good average, drive in a bunch of runs, and hit you enough homers to satisfy you. And he had, obviously, a slow start to the season, but he's obviously picking it back up, and what do you know? He's hitting 300, he's on pace for 95 RBIs, almost 20 homers, so maybe he's not quite at where you want him to be in the power department, but it's good enough. So I feel like he's always going to be like a 10 to 15 range at first base, and you just ride him out during his struggles because at the end of the day, he's going to be there. And, you know, next year will probably be pretty much the same thing. I know he's going to be 35 next year, but he's still putting up numbers. And first base is not as deep as it, you know, it should be. It's pretty weak. So a guy like Adrian Peterson, you can get him for kind of late for what he gives you. So I'm down for Adrian Gonzalez for another year or two.
Did you just call him Adrian Peterson?
I was going to say, that seems like a great...
Did I? Well, you know, it happens. I'm in football mode, all right?
He may score a lot of touchdowns. Darius, what are your thoughts on Gonzalez?
I'm thinking about taking Adrian Peterson, Eli's fantasy tips. Take Adrian
all
Peterson.
Right.
I think when he's healthy, he's always been a very good hitter. I think we talked about Gonzalez a few weeks ago, and it didn't seem like the power was there, and there was some concern about his back issue that he hadn't got over that. Obviously, he has now. He's hitting the ball as hard as he used to again, and the home run power's come with it. So it looks great the rest of the way, and as long as he's going into next season healthy, I think you can count him to be a really useful producer again. He's one of those few guys that you often hear people cite as being able to really effectively change his approach to get RBI as well. So while I really don't believe in the concept of, you know, RBR guys generally, I do think Gonzalez is one of those players you can always count on to get you above average totals in that department. And in that Dodgers lineup with the likes of Seager there, I think there's plenty of opportunities for him going forward. So, yeah, he's going to be underrated and probably underdrafted because he is going to be 35. But I think as long as the health is fine, then there's nothing to worry about there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Darius. He is a guy that I feel, and you, Eli, he is a guy that kind of comes in underrated every year. But usually he's kind of just one of those set it and forget it kind of guys where by the end of the season, you look at the stat line and go, okay, that was actually pretty good. I mean, he's hitting over 300, which, you know, if he continues that, it'll be the first time he's done that since 2011. You know, the power isn't going to be there in the same way, more than likely, that it was the last 2 years, but he was dealing with some injury issues. It's nice to see it kind of come on now. He's a guy who can hit him in bunches, as we've seen. He's had, you know, had the 3-home run game, then had a 2-home run game, you know, a few days before that. So everything else is pretty in line, kind of, for the most part, with what we expect out of him. He's walking 9% of the time. He's striking out around 18%. So, you know, I think this is all good signs. You know, maybe the average takes a little bit of dip rest of the way, but I'm not going to be afraid to take a shot on him because his price won't be very high next year. Like you said, it'll be 35, but that'll scare enough people away where he probably will come at a fairly decent discount. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy. Talk about Felix Hernandez. Actually, the next three guys are guys I just I wrote an article for FanGraphs that went up on Wednesday that talking about five different guys that that their values could change wildly depending on how they kind of finish out the season. And this is one of the guys that was on that list. It's Felix Hernandez, who, to my surprise, having kind of not spent a lot of time, I don't have Felix in any leagues. I don't tend to watch a ton of Mariners games because they're usually on when the Giants are on. And so it's usually when I have to go, or when I go back and watch kind of the replays of games, I catch him. He's having a pretty decent season. You know, 3.26 ERA, I think like 1.22 whip. Not striking out a lot of guys, but considering he did spend a little bit of time on the DL, you know, he's putting together a fairly nice season, and I think his value could change quite a bit, depending on how he kind of finishes his out. Darius, what are your thoughts on Felix Hernandez for the rest of this year and then going into next year?
I'm pretty down on Felix, I have to say. I know his velocity's been going down for years, and he's always found ways to deal with it. And for that reason, in the past, I've been pretty comfortable because I felt like he's a guy who, no matter you know what his sort of his base velocity is, he's been able to pitch cleverly and use his various pitches to the best effect that he possibly can. But this year, the control seems to be getting away from him a bit. It's comfortably the highest walk rate of his career. And I'm starting to wonder if he's just not pitching in the zone as much anymore because he's worried about people maybe catching up to him a little bit more than they used to. He's got the highest zone contact rate of his career. It's over 91% now, which is, if you kind of look at the guys around him on the leaderboard there, it's not the best collection of pitchers. So unless he's going to become like a really weak contact, pitch-to-contact type guy, and maybe sort of curb that control a little bit, I don't think that the ERA and the WHIP are going to stay as good as they are at the moment. So I'm foreseeing that Felix is going to keep going downhill from here, and potentially he could be a bust for people next year if the sort of the surface numbers from this year make them think that he's kind of the same Felix that he's always been.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Felix moving into next year?
I'm not quite as doom and gloom. I also think that the price on him won't be outrageous unless he, you know, has six great starts the rest of the way. I think there's going to be a pretty reasonable discount. I think people are pretty frustrated with him at this point. I know he's turned around a little bit lately, but I just think this is a little bit like a Verlander situation where he's not going to be as dominant as he once was, but he's going to learn how to pitch with some of the diminished velocity. You know, Felix is still only 30. He's very smart. He's pitching in a good park. I just think he's going to turn things around and be consistent again. And he's never going to be the stud that he once was. But I just feel like you're going to get a bargain with him. So I'm more optimistic that he's going to be, you know, a continued asset for a couple more years.
I think his name value will always maybe not always, but at least next year will continue to outshine his production. And so that, for me, I don't think there will be a huge discount. You look at kind of the, you know, some of the underlying statistics, his FIP and XFIP are, both either right at or over a full run higher than his ERA. So you got to think that is probably going to come back. And, you know, he's stranding guys at a 77% clip, which I think is probably a tad bit high. I do worry about the velocity, but Eli does bring up a good point that, you know, as pitchers get older, they have to learn how to be a better overall pitcher as opposed to relying on just the velocity or the stuff. as it starts to diminish. But I mean, we've had a pretty considerable drop, you know, over the course of the last 3 years. In 2014, he had a 92 mile an hour fastball. It dropped a little bit, you know, about half a mile an hour in 2015, and then now it's dropped another mile and a half. It's down to 90.4. So it's a two full mile an hour drop on his fastball in just a 2 year span. You know, I always kind of flash back to what happened when he signed that long-term deal in Seattle, and they found, you know, troubling things in his the MRI of his elbow and shoulder. And I just wonder if there's just a huge cliff that he's going to fall off at some point. And so I'm not willing to pay what the going rate will be unless it's considerably lower than it was this year, because this year it was extremely high. I mean, you had to pay. Let's see, I got to pull up my article. He was a 53rd player taken in NFBC leagues on average this year. That's a really, you know, especially if you're in a 15 team league, that's a high fifth round pick, or sorry, a high fourth round pick. So I mean, that's a pretty steep price to pay, and not one I'm going to pay next year, unless he has, you know, kind of a rough end of the season and really drops in people's ADPs. So let's go ahead and move on to the next guy. That's Matt Carpenter, who started off the year extremely hot, was one of the best players in baseball, kind of doubling down on what we saw from him last season. Unfortunately, he had the oblique injury that ended his first half a little bit prematurely. And since coming back, he's been pretty bad. He hasn't looked right. Is not hitting the ball the way he was. He's only got one home run, I believe, in the second half. Eli, what are your thoughts on Matt Carpenter rest of this year and then moving into next season?
I love Carpenter, but I never know what to expect from him. He was a monster in 2013, kind of a little bit of a dud in 2014. Was good last year, great again this year. I just think, you know, the injury might be a little bit of a lost second half for him. It's fine, but next year I'm sure he'll be healthy. For the most part, he's been healthy throughout his career, so I'm not too worried about this lingering into next year. So I think when it's all said and done next year, he's going to be a pretty reasonable top 10 option at the second or third base position or whatever he's eligible at. So I really like him. Obviously, he's in a good lineup. He's going to score a ton of runs. He gets on base a ton. He's got a good amount of power. I think there's a lot to like for next year. I hope that his price goes down a little bit if he continues to have a bad second half.
And that was kind of the point of me talking about him in my article and bringing him up today is I think if this continues to be kind of a slow rest of the season, then he could come at a pretty nice discount. You know, people are going to look just kind of, you know, at the overall numbers and go, well, he's obviously not the guy who hit 28 or, you know, or so home runs. Yeah, 28 home runs in 2015. You know, maybe he's really more of a, you know, 15 to 20 guy. And I think that'll be a nice little bonus for people that don't realize that he was on pace to hit 28 home runs again earlier in the season before the injury. So
can anyone explain what the hell happened to him in 2014? His on-base percentage and slugging were both 375. What the hell?
I can't remember. I mean, I think he wasn't he hitting at the top of that lineup and just walking a bunch?
He did have 95 walks, and I mean, it's a really strange season. But even if the power doesn't fully come back, you're still looking at a guy with a ton of runs who is probably going to be an asset in average, and he's going to still give you enough homers at that position that you're going to be totally fine with it.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Carpenter?
I really agree about the discount thing. I'm almost, because I don't own Carpenter anywhere now, I am kind of hoping that he doesn't do that well over the next few weeks so that we can come into next season and everybody sort of forgets what he was doing before he got hurt. I've kind of been looking to see if he has been really turning on anything as well as he was in the first half, and I haven't seen anything. I went through a few of his games and highlights, and yeah, as you say, only the one homer and two doubles since he came back, which has been about 3 weeks now. So I do think that he might still be feeling it, or at least there's a little bit of rust there from the injury, even if he's not necessarily feeling the oblique anymore. And his strikeout and walk rates are also going in the wrong directions at the moment. So I think probably the rest of the year you can't really expect what you get in the first half. But yeah, I love your point about the discount that could be coming next year.
And I mean, it's one of the reasons I said, like, I keep plugging my article. So, you know, this is shameless promotion. But, you know, one of the reasons, you know, why I wrote the article and these, you know, we're still talking about a lot of these kind of guys that have either been struggling or have been really hot kind of late in the season or throughout the season is because, you know, this is the kind of value stuff that we will, you know, take into next year. Guys will be underrated or overrated based on kind of how they finish the year, especially in the second half. And these are guys that you can target in trades in the offseason for your keeper and dynasty leagues. But also, especially if you draft early, a lot of people's values will be inflated or deflated based on what we're seeing right now. You know, and there's no better there's no better example than Marcus Stroman, because Marcus Stroman came back last year after tearing his ACL at the beginning, or ACL or Achilles, can't remember which one it was, before the start of the season. He missed almost the entire season, came back in September, pitched really, really well at the end of September before going into the playoffs and pitching mediocrely, and was extremely high within the industry based on that small sample size of work last year. So people really overdraft him this year. He hasn't performed. I was one of those people that was advocating for him. You know, to Mike Warner's credit, he was one of the guys that was saying, don't draft him that high. Don't pay that much in auction. And as usual, I didn't listen to Mike. He started out rough, but he's starting to turn it around. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Marcus Stroman's season this year and then going into next season?
Well, I was really disappointed, like you, with Stroman through the first half. I've actually managed to trade him away in one league for David Price, who we'll get to later. But since the start of July, it's been incredible. He's got 64 strikeouts and 8 walks in just over 59 innings. That's a 9-start stretch. His scramble rate is still above 50% as well. So that's more than the strikeout per inning with a 50% groundball rate, which is incredible. Your colleague Eno did an interesting piece on how he sort of tweaked his delivery a bit and maybe sort of keeping his hands a bit lower and slightly changed where he's positioning his legs before he pitches as well, and that seems to have helped him get over the ball a bit more. The thing that I've really noticed is the slider. He seems to be locating it a lot better, and I think he's fooling a lot more hitters with it as well. I think he's either catching that corner low and away, or he's missing it, but the hitters are swinging at it more, thinking he's going to catch it, and it's really made the strikeout rate jump. So I love what he's changed about his pitch mix and the improvements in that slider, and I think going forward he can be the guy that we hoped he was going to be coming into this year.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Stroman?
Yeah, I agree. I really like him. I feel like when we fell in love with him a couple years ago, he's actually doing a lot of the same things. The strikeout rate's pretty much identical. The walks are slightly up, but in the last 9 starts, he's only walked more than one guy once. So he's turned that around. It's the only thing that's different from 2 years ago, really, is that his home run rate is doubled. So I think it's a little spiked right now. I think it'll normalize for next year, so the homers will go down. The ground ball rate's even better than it was 2 years ago. It's up to 60.2%, which is up from 53.8% 2 years ago. I know he pitches in a bad ballpark and maybe not the best division, but he's really talented. He's really young. He's turning things around. I think he's going to limit his walks and limit his homers next year, and he's going to return to not an ace, but you know, a pretty good number 2 or 3 starter for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what Darius said and something I referenced in my own piece about Eno's article was fantastic. If you do go to my piece on FanCraft, I do link Eno's article in the Stroman section. Since making those mechanical changes, he has a 3.40 ERA, 1.16 WHIP, and a 10.49 K per nine in 7 starts. So I mean, you're starting to see the guy that everybody was so excited about coming into this season. I think there's a very good chance he will carry that through the rest of the way. And then, unfortunately, for the most part, there will not be a huge discount coming into next year. And that's what I was kind of hoping for, having struggled with Marcus Stroman on a number of my rosters this year, is that we'd at least get the discount next season. I don't know if it'll be there, but he's definitely a guy that will be probably fairly high up on my rankings coming into next year.
I was just about to ask you, where do you think you might place? I'm thinking around like the 30 range, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I would guess that sounds about right. You know, he was the 92nd player taken off the board this year. I'm going to guess he's going to be a tad bit lower than that,
yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be much lower. I think he's going to be drafted in the top 125. You know, I mean, he's still only 25 years old. You know, it'll be his age 26 season next year. You know, he plays in a shitty park, but, you know, with an offense behind him that will carry him in, you know, in some games that that he struggles in. I mean, even with his just awful first half of the season, he had 7 wins. So, like, he's going to get wins even when he pitches bad. So I think he's a guy that will probably – we're not going to see the huge discount. I don't think that maybe we had hoped for. But, you know, there will be people that overlook him because they'll look at last season's numbers and go, ooh, this is not a guy I want on my team. Let's move over and talk about Ian Kinsler, who's been slumping as of late. But all in all, is, you know, so far put together a pretty nice season. Eli, what are your thoughts on Kinsler kind of going forward into next year?
Pretty nice season. He's having a monster season. I don't think we can expect anything like this next year. He's still going to be solid. He's underrated continuously. People think he's going to start declining because, I mean, he is 34, but he continues to get it done. He's on pace for 121 runs, which is insane considering he's got a 335 on-base percentage. He just doesn't draw walks. And it's not like his – I don't understand how he's doing this. So I've got to expect he's going to drop off maybe 25 runs for next year. I think the homers, he's on pace for 29 homers. The last time he had more than 20 was in 2011, so I think you got to expect the power numbers to go down. And he's on pace for about 18 steals, which would be the most since 2012. So considering it's going to be 35, I think it's reasonable to suspect that the steals go down a little bit. But even with that being said, even if all these numbers go down a little bit, we're still talking about, what, a pretty well-rounded but top 7 second baseman? I know it's a better position and a lot of people give him credit for, but I still think he's going to be a pretty damn good player next year. It all depends on where he's going in drafts. If people are buying this, then I think he's probably going to go too high. But if people continue to, you know, think that he's going to decline, then he might go at a decent price.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Kinsler?
It seems like he's selling out some of the contact for power. His strikeout rate's the highest of his career. Still not that bad relative to a lot of guys these days. 18% is fine when you see guys like Chris Davis striking out 30% of the time on a regular basis. So I think you might expect a little bit lower batting average if he sort of maintains his approach going forward. But he certainly seems to have found a decent balance at the moment where he's hitting for power without losing too much of his other value. I don't like that the Tigers have decided to just insert Eric Ibar right into the two-hole behind him. Ibar has improved of late, but he's still been having a pretty dreadful season. And it's kind of disappointing when you've got the three guys behind him, Cabrera, Bimar, and JD Martinez. It sort of seems a bit of a shame to have Eric Ibar in the middle between those guys and Kinsler. But he's still kind of a 100-plus run player in that lineup. And I do think he won't go too high next year just because he is going to be 35. But he's been one of the more consistent fantasy producers over the last 5-6 years, really. So I've always kind of liked Kinsler, and I think he seems to be one of these guys who kind of can change his approach and sort of pretty quickly get results. So, yeah, I think he might be a decent value next year. And I certainly, like Eli said, wouldn't expect the same power speed numbers, but definitely still enough to make him a top 10 second baseman for 2017.
He's definitely selling out for power quite a bit. I mean, you mentioned the high strikeout rate, for at least for him, 18%, up from just under 12% last year. You know, even his hard contact percentage is like 8 percentage points higher than it was last year as well, and in the highest of his career at age 34. So, I mean, I think there are definitely some numbers that are going to regress. But I think he'll be I don't think he's going to be extremely overvalued coming into next year either. Let's do a quick like kind of would you rather for second base next year with Ian Kinsler. Would you rather Ian Kinsler next year or DJ LeMahieu?
I'll take Kinsler. I think I've never really quite bought the Mayhew, despite him doing it for a little while now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Kinsler as well. Kinsler or Brian Dozier?
You got to ask that one. He is on fire. He's a home run every day now.
He already has 29 home runs.
Yeah.
I'll take Dozier because, you know, me and OBP guys, and I have faith in his on base, even if his average is 220.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm looking at the ESPN player rater, and they have Kinsler two spots ahead of Dozier, and I can't quite figure out why.
It's probably the runs.
It's got to be run scored, right?
Yeah.
20 more runs scored. Ian Kinsler or the surprising multi-positional eligible Jose Ramirez?
Get out of here with that.
I'll take Kinsler.
I'm not buying this for Ramirez. I mean, he's very solid. I don't think there's any way he can compete with Kinsler next year.
The only problem with Ramirez is, like, I mean, he'll play, but he's still going to be kind of a utility guy. Like, you know, I don't think his at-bats are ever going to be guaranteed in that lineup with Lindor at short and Kipnis at second. I mean, I guess they could play him at third.
Yeah, do they ever have a good third baseman?
And they've moved all their third basemen to the outfield, and they seem to have fallen out of favor with Giovanni Ursula, who I don't even know if he's been up this year.
I don't think he has. At least they don't have Juan Uribe there anymore.
Yeah. Ian Kinsler or Odor?
Ooh.
That's tricky for me.
I think I'm going to go Odor because of Kinsler's health issues in the past and age. But I think it's way closer than it probably will be on draft day.
Yeah, I'm going Odor. Cut.
Yeah, I probably will take Odor in that
Jesus,
situation.
He's got 12 walks. Where's the plate discipline at, man?
If he didn't have 12 walks, I wouldn't have hesitated so much. But I really, I'm not sure how it works when he has 12 walks at the end of August.
Yeah. Last one, Kinsler or Gene Segura?
I don't know what Kinsler. To make of Segura bounce back, so I'll take Kinsler.
Who'd you say, Eli?
Yeah, Kinsler. I really do like Segura, though.
I like Segura, too, and I'm going to go with him. I love the speed. I love what we've seen this year. I still think there's more speed than just the 27 stolen bases that we have. You know, he's never going to get RBIs, but I think that is a lineup that gets Pollock back, here shortly, and could get better over time. I think Segura is a guy who we could be looking at as, and obviously they don't care about leading him off. So
are you worried about that 363 BABIP? I know he's a high BABIP guy generally, but that's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, it'll come down, but I mean, even if it comes down, like if he loses 20 points of batting average, he's still a 300 hitter. You know, leading off in one of the best parks in baseball for an offense that should be pretty good next year.
So, I think if you don't need the speed, I still think it's Kinsler, but obviously Segura is a great asset.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to David Price, who has been rebounding as of late. I was hoping Chuck would be here so we could kind of hear him kind of eat some crow after just bashing on Price earlier in the season. Darius, what are your thoughts on David Price moving forward?
I feel like I'm probably going to say the same thing that I said last time. The peripherals are still great. Maybe a little velocity dip recently, but it's very small, and everything else is still well above average. The problem really is that he still gives up a few too many home runs to be sort of a truly elite guy. And I know that he's sort of been annoyed with his performance this season. I think he is just getting punished perhaps more than usual for those pitches that he's leaving out over the plate. He's had some insane BABIP luck as well lately, so it kind of seems like whenever one thing starts to go right for him this year, something else goes wrong. So I just think he's been really unlucky, and he's pitching in a tough division, you know, against like the Orioles and the Blue Jays, who are really good lineups. So I think David Price is a great pitcher whose ERA and WHIP don't quite match his talent.
Eli, what are your thoughts on David Price?
Give me this guy any day. I love innings eaters. He's on pace for 232 Ks. The WHIP and ERA are a little high, but they could come down. And even if they don't, if you have a problem with rostering guys like this, then just add a reliever who gives you helps you a little bit in the Arian Whip, because this is too many strikeouts here to pass up, too many wins. He's on a great team. Yeah, the whip's a little high, but who cares, man? Like, it's David Price. He's about as consistent and reliable as it gets.
Yeah, his ERA, or sorry, his FIP and XFIP and CR are all right in line. That he should have much lower ERA, more like a 3-4 guy this year. The strikeouts, I know it sucks that he pitches in Boston against some of the better teams in the league, and in Toronto and in the Orioles, and the Parks aren't necessarily great in that division, but he's pitched that division for a long time, you know, except for that brief stint in Detroit. I think he'll figure out the ballpark a little bit, and I think he'll be fine next year. And I think you're going to get a pretty nice discount going into next season. I think this is a guy that, you know, we've taken as a top 10, top 12 pitcher for the last, you know, better part of a decade. That for the first time will be probably just barely a top 20 pitcher on draft day. And that is the kind of guy I want to buy in on. So David Price is definitely a guy that I'm sure I will be higher on than most in the industry next season. Let's talk about Jose Peraza, who recently got a call up to the major leagues. Considering the Reds suck and they're playing for nothing, I'm sure he will get plenty of run. Eli, what are your thoughts on Jose Peraza for the rest of this year and then moving on into next year?
I've been obsessed with Peraza for a while. He's been disappointing a little bit in AAA with only 10 steals in 71 games, but he's still only 22. He's going to have probably multi-position eligibility potentially. Actually, where's he been playing lately?
I want to say he's been playing in center, but I'm not 100% sure. Or not center, left, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to double check. Give me a second. You talk and I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, the power, he doesn't have much power, but you know, you don't need power with these kind of guys. He's going to get you a bunch of steals. Hopefully they hit him at the number two spot moving forward or into next year so he can get some more runs. I think he's probably been a little overhyped from his Atlanta days, and he's been traded a couple times, so maybe he's fallen out of favor a couple places. But I think the Reds have a lot invested in him. They basically traded Todd Frazier straight up for Peraza, essentially. So they're going to give him every opportunity. He's going to be able to play there. I think he's going to be solid, but I don't think he's going to be a stolen base stud. He's, you know what, maybe 30 steals next year with a decent average and not much else. But if he hits the top of the order somewhere, then hopefully he can get you a lot of runs and be a little bit of a three-category guy.
For the season, he has been kind of splitting his time between left, center, and shortstop. Since he's been called up, though, he's played all four games at shortstop.
That's interesting, although shortstop is really deep, but still, if he's just an outfield only, that certainly hurts his value, but he's still going to be an asset.
I mean, I don't think he'll... maybe he should have enough games, I guess, to qualify in the outfield still, and then have probably shortstop eligibility if he continues to play there. He's got a couple games at second sprinkled in, so maybe like in your Yahoo leagues, he'll have second, short, and outfield eligibility probably going into next year. Darius, what are your thoughts on Peraza?
I'd like to see, I've seen a little bit more stolen base success at AAA this year, certainly like Eli mentioned, not that impressive. And he's not going to give you any power, but as long as he doesn't strike out too much and so can get on base a decent amount, then I think he's going to be able to run. The Reds are obviously not afraid of letting players run. They're second in the majors in steals, and that's not just Billy Hamilton, although he plays a big part in it. So I think we may be looking at something in between sort of an Alcides Escobar in his better years and maybe Ben Revere type numbers. Not quite as high on average, but I think more steals than you could have got out of Escobar. So somewhere in that 30 to 40 range if you can really hit enough to get on base to do that. So I don't think the most exciting player in the world, but I think at the peak of his career he can definitely provide well above average stolen base numbers from the middle infield.
Yeah, this is a guy that is value for next season, or at least coming into drafts next season. Like, I don't really have a really strong feeling that whether he's going to be overrated or underrated. I feel like he is going to come at a pretty fair value, that people won't be taking him super high, but there's going to be a lot of people that equate, you know, that Jose Peraza was the guy that they got for Frazier. You're welcome, Eli. So he may have a little bit of kind of added draft day value because of that, because of the steals potential that we have seen in the minors, though not this year. And I mean, really not even last year. I mean, he only stole, between two minor league organizations and the majors, looks like he stole 36 bases. So, I mean, not bad, but not the 64 we saw in 2013, or the 60 we saw in 2014. So, you know, sometimes guys stop stealing as often, but I think this will come back, considering, like Darius said, the amount that the Reds kind of push it on the base paths. Price, the manager there, he tends to like to run and be aggressive. So as long as he's still the manager there and doesn't go on another FU tirade this year, I think that kind of bodes nice things for Jose Peraza moving forward into next season. Especially because I don't think I'm hoping that his value won't be super inflated. Let's go ahead and talk about the next guy, the last guy we're going to talk about is Gerrit Cole, who is not had the season that a lot of people, including myself, really expected, has come off a couple shaky starts, though. I believe he's starting right now as we're talking. Kind of Wednesday afternoon. So we'll have to see kind of how he performs today. But Darius, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole moving forward into next season?
Well, I kind of wonder to see, because those two starts, I think he's given up 12 hits in two consecutive games. And so I wondered if, there's something a bit more serious going on. But his velocity looks fine. So I actually went back and watched these. I started making some notes as to sort of things, whether I could see anything, going wrong, anything sort of poor mechanics or any injury concerns. And all I ended up making notes on was how unlucky he got. There was a bunt hit in the first game, double play overturned on replay. Both the third baseman and the shortstop made errors on balls hit right at them. One play, the catcher lets the ball go to the backstop, which led to a run scoring later in the inning. I think Polanco made two terrible plays in right field. I don't think they would be classed as errors, but certainly not the second. But it just looked like he completely lost the second ball in the air. There was also a play at home plate overturned that would have been an out that ended up to be another run. And then the second game, even worse, I think he nearly gets decapitated by a line drive from D. Gordon on the very first batter of the game. So then he misses the next play on another ball hit straight back at him. And then in the second, he gets a ball called on him. And then I think he's so like fired up and pissed off at the umpire that he runs in and collides with Francisco Cervelli when Tom Kohler makes this terrible bunt that just pops straight up in the air, and they don't get the out there either. So after that, I stopped watching and just decided that these were two really bad days for Gerrit Cole that had very little to do with his pitching and a lot to do with sort of bad luck and just him losing his head a little bit in the second one.
So, well, I'm definitely going to go back and watch that Miami game just for some laughs.
Especially this play with Cervelli is incredible because it's such an easy out, and Cole just comes steaming in and runs straight into him. So it's quite entertaining, but I think he's fine. You know, his numbers look good to me, and he's been, you know, his ERA is still pretty good, even with these two really rough outings. So I'm pretty confident in Cole going forward, and I think this is just a couple of bad luck starts that I don't look great on his record, but I don't think haven't make any comment on his ability as a pitcher.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole moving forward?
I feel like people are all doom and gloom, and entering today at a 3.3 ERA and 91 strikeouts and 109 innings. I know it's obviously very disappointing considering what he did last year, but I think he's gotten really unlucky. The BABIP's 341. The big problem has been that he's just walked too many guys this year. But I think he's been, you know, he's been hurt, and I just think it's a little bit of a lost year. But he's still 25. He's had two great seasons before this. Pitches in a good park. I just think if people are panicking about Cole or willing to sell at a low price, you really have to go out and get him for next year. I don't think this year is going to be great. He didn't pitch well today. 5 runs in 5 innings. So I don't think he's going to be stud by the rest of this year by any means, but for next year I think people shouldn't be panicking, because if you look at the FIP and all the other numbers, he hasn't pitched quite as bad as it seems. So I think he's going to be pretty damn good next year.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Eli. I think this is a guy that again will probably be undervalued on draft day. people are going to look at last year's numbers as kind of a fluke, and that the league caught up to him. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I really like how you pointed out the high BABIP, the 341 BABIP. In spite of that, still pitching at a 330 ERA. So, I mean, I think this is a guy that is true talent level, is probably a 3 ERA, and the strikeouts are going to be there. So, this is a guy that I think will probably fall out of the top 15, top 20 at pitcher. And I don't think that's necessarily where he should kind of fall. So definitely a guy I will be targeting coming into next season.
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty safe to say that what we're looking at, like a 15 game winner with like 180 plus Ks and a pretty good ERA and WHIP, right? I mean,
yeah, and he could still get better. I mean, he's got the best pitching coach in baseball,
second best. Don Cooper's number one, but okay. I agree. It's probably Sears 1 and Cooper 2.
Mm-hmm. And pitches in a good ballpark with a pretty good team around him in terms of being able to give him chances to win. I just think this is a little bit kind of a blip in the radar. And I think Darius mentioned that, you know, he'd been injured earlier in the season. He may still just kind of be feeling some of the lingering effects of that, been unlucky. I like Gerrit Cole moving into next year, and I think he will come out a fairly decent discount next year.
Cole Taillon and Glasnow is going to be really fun for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice. Now, if they can get rid of Liriano, I don't know what Liriano's contract.
They already did, you doofus.
Oh, that's right. They got really. They have Chad Cole. I forgot about.
Yes.
Yeah, I forgot they traded Liriano. I just stopped paying attention to him. Even though he's on, I think I still have him rostered in my Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League team. I don't know why, but that's right. They got rid of Liriano. They got rid of, well, AJ Burnett retired. Who are the rest of the pitchers on that staff?
Yeah, it's not pretty after those three, honestly. Vogelsong.
Oh God,
is on the roster.
Vogelsong had a great start against the Giants, and that's about it. Though it's. Yeah, considering he got his face destroyed earlier in the season on that comebacker, I'm surprised he actually even came back to pitch. I figured that would have been the last we saw of Vogelsong in the major leagues.
Oh, Nova is who we're forgetting, of course.
Oh, and Nova's pitching really, really well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the Ray Searage effect or not. I believe Paul Spohr said he was going to write up Nova here pretty soon for Fangraphs. So I don't know if he has or not quite yet, but definitely be on the lookout for that. Our buddy Paul Spohr.
Totally shocking that American League pitcher going to the National League really improved his value. Who could have seen that coming?
Moving from Yankee Stadium to Pittsburgh, having Ray Searage as your pitching coach. Nova's been really, really good as of late, I believe, right?
I had the complete game against the Astros earlier this week, and yeah, I think he's definitely been improving. The overall numbers don't look that good, but I think his last few starts have been pretty nice.
Yeah, the overall numbers don't look great, but since he had two not great starts where he didn't even go six innings against the Giants and the Dodgers, but a good start against Cincinnati when he first came to Pittsburgh, and then the complete game. One earned run allowed, and only one walk against Houston. So that was a pretty nice start. So maybe that's another guy we should maybe try to kind of keep an eye on and see if he can kind of rebound a little bit of his value after a kind of a rough year in New York to start the year. But that is going to wrap us up. Darius, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I actually got a thing up that will interest some of the prospect heads over at Banished to the Pen today. I looked at Gary Sanchez and David Dahl's somewhat incredible starts to their careers and sort of how they fit into historical context, whether they are record-breaking or not. So you can go and check that out. And I think next week I'll try and get something up, sort of a September tips and tricks, things you can do end of the season that you might not be able to do in the other months of the year, maybe while people aren't paying attention or while MLB teams are sort of quitting on the season, things you can do to maximize your chances of winning a league.
All right. I'll definitely be looking forward to that because I am trying to I want to win at least one league this year. I'm in 17 goddamn leagues, and it's, I'm in third place in probably about half of them. Eli, where can you be reached? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. And if you're into football, you know, check those podcasts out because that's sports about to start. Yay!
Yeah, football season's about to start. Yeah, the Redskins.
Don't forget about Adrian Peterson.
Yes, Adrian Peterson really? Is a football player.
Let it go, guys. Let it go.
I was going to make a David Johnson joke when we talked about David Price as well, and I totally forgot.
I totally wish you had. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes. Really helps us out. We've got, you know, the football podcast getting that have, you know, been going for a little while now. Baseball is still going on at least 2 to 3 times a week. We have basketball. Hopefully we'll be starting here shortly. You can read anything you write on friendsoffantasybenefits.com for football, fan graphs right now for baseball. And that is about it. So that's going to wrap us up. A little bit shorter episode than we usually do. But for Eli, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.